over 1 million downloads strong. This is the Mad Money Machine. Hello, everyone. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. This is Mad Money Machine, show 101. So good to be with you. Thank you for indulging me on show 100. It was good to have a couple weeks off, though, although I am out of practice, and I'm trying to figure out, what's this show all about again? Well, I've got a lot of stuff queued up, and I'm going to try to put it in some semblance of order and report it to you today on show 101. Thank you so very much for joining me. The Mad Money Machine is sponsored by Index Funds Advisors. Now, if you don't know who they are, you need to go out to the website, ifa.com, and check these guys out. Their motto is matching people with portfolios. Index Funds Advisors. Well, they are advisors to help you manage your financial freedom. And what they'll do, they'll take a look at your situation. They'll come up with a risk capacity profile for you, and then they'll develop a portfolio that matches that risk capacity. And their portfolios include mutual funds from Dimensional Fund Advisors, DFA for the Cognoscenti. Dimensional Fund Advisors mutual funds are available only through advisor relationships like those at Index Funds Advisors. That helps keep their costs down because there isn't a whole lot of trading in and out of their funds. And we know when you keep costs down, you're able to keep the money for yourself. I don't think there's a better time to contact Index Funds Advisors and have them help you manage your financial freedom. Do it today. In the 2 weeks between shows, the Mad Money Machine has had some positive mentions in other places. First of all, the Fast Money Machine. David mentioned Mad Money Machine as his tool in the crib that week. Thank you very much, David. I also went into LinkedIn, and I said, yeah, go ahead and take my Google email address book and see who else is on LinkedIn. And one of the guys that matched was Matt Krantz at USA Today. He writes the investing column out there, Ask Matt. And so I said, LinkedIn, let's link in. And he did, and he linked in, and he wrote me back and says, oh, and by the way, I mentioned Mad Money Machine in my new book, Investing Online for Dummies. Let me turn to that page. Let's see, what is it? 32. Got it out of the library. He has a section on there called Sites for Passive Investors to Start With. And he's one of them he lists in there is Mad Money Machine. MadMoneyMachine.com is an internet radio show that tries to make the seemingly boring world of passive investing more exciting. The host, Paul Douglas Boyer, weaves jokes, music, and facts in a way to keep you investing passively. Well, thank you very much, Matt. And I also got a Google Alerts hit from Dan Solon. He writes a blog out at the Huffington Post. And he had a quiz out there, which he called The Smartest Investment Quiz You'll Ever Take. And it had about 10 questions. Question number 9 was, one study compared the performance in 2006 of Jim Cramer's stock picks with a globally diversified index portfolio consisting of all stocks. Which statement most accurately reflects the results of this study? He said the correct answer is B. The index funds had a return of 22.51%. The Cramer picks lost 0.2%. And you can find the results here. And here was a hyperlink that linked back to the Mad Money Machine portfolios page. And I got a few hits from that. Thank you very much, Dan Solon. Let's see. The other thing that happened in the interim was I did celebrate my birthday. Now, before I tell you what I got for my birthday as a gift, let me just tell you that I've been working on sort of a Manhattan project for the family. No, not building a bomb, but trying to come up with some sort of long-term project that we as a family can all work on together. And one of the ideas that came into my head, you know, the project should be something where we learn something and we work together cooperatively to do something. And I'm sure that you guys would have a lot better ideas than I have. Probably volunteer work would be the best thing to do. But the thing that came to my mind was planning a trip to China. And yeah, the inspiration from this came from reading Jim Rogers' book, Investing in China, Bull on China is his book. And I thought, you know, I'd like to go over there and see China, just like Jim Rogers went over there and saw China. I wouldn't see it in nearly the capacity that he saw it. I think he bought a custom Mercedes with a tow-behind trailer and drove all around the world with it. But I just want to go over there and see the place. Well, the gift I got for my birthday was a software package from a company called Fluence. And it is a software program to help you learn Mandarin Chinese. Now, I must say that when I looked at this wrapped present, I thought it was an iPhone. And so having opened it and it wasn't an iPhone, there was a touch of disappointment. Although I must confess that I wouldn't buy an iPhone right now. I would wait till the second half of this year. Maybe their 3G iPhones will come out. And also waiting for this announcement on the SDK. Maybe there's going to be some more software coming up. But anyway, I don't think we're going to keep this software. I'm debating back and forth. It is a little bit expensive. And I'm just not that motivated to actually learn the language. If I had some close Chinese friends who I could converse with on a day-to-day basis, I would love to take this up. But I really just don't have the motivation or the real need, I guess, to learn it. Although there's a whole lot more people speaking Chinese than there are speaking English, and I'd like to be among the majority in language skills, I guess. So meanwhile, I get this email from John Davidson. He says, "So, I'm in China right now, and they use yuan. That's about 1/7 of a dollar. Anyway, the reason I'm emailing is because they have 1/10 and 1/2 yuan bills. So basically, I never get change in coins. Every time I get change in paper, I think of your show." And he talks about the coins that they do have. He says there's one that's 1/10 of a renminbi. And I asked him, well, what's the cheapest thing that you can buy with one of the smallest coins? And he went to a store and he found something for 1.35 yuan, I suppose it was. He says, so I bought it for you, and my change included the Yi Zhao, which is a dime, and some coin that had a 5 on it that must be 5/100 of a renminbi, or a nickel. So I bought the item. I'm not sure what it is, but I'm thinking it's some type of peanut. Anyway, give me your address, and I'll send it to you along with the coins that have gotten change. And he says, by the way, they don't have Lipton tea here. He says, the funny part of sending you the money would be that it cost me more than what the money's worth. And he has posted some pictures out at johnodavidson.com, and you can check out his adventure. Well, thanks a lot, John. But another gift I got for my birthday was a board game called Power Grid. Now, we already have the number one ranked board game out at boardgamegeek.com, and that is Puerto Rico. And Puerto Rico is a wonderful game. There's so much complexity to the variables about resources that you choose and how you play them in the game. Very rich, very balanced, technically perfectly designed game. Power Grid is also a game similar to Puerto Rico in the sense that you have a number of variables that you're trying to balance in the most efficient manner to be able to power up 17 cities with the resources that you acquire. It's a fun, fun game, and I appreciate getting that for the birthday. The other game I got was Elfinland, not ranked quite as highly at BoardGameGeek.com, but it's also fun. You are an elf, and you travel around the Elfinland trying to pick up tokens from all the various cities, and whoever has the most tokens at the end of round 4 wins the game. And finally, another game a family friend of ours brought over, and we played it, was called The Collapse of Pompeii. That one's a very difficult game to learn the rules to, especially when you didn't have a copy of the rules. You had to dig through the BoardGameGeek.com other people uploading the rules to the website to figure out how to play it. So, I got an email from Evander. Says, thanks for the great show. Just one comment. Sometimes it helps to check your website from somebody else's computer, like at the library, or from a few other computers, just to see what others are seeing. Looking forward to show 100, blah, 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 EF. Well, I wrote back to Evander asking, what are you seeing? Seriously, tell me, what's going wrong with my website? Now, I have to admit that my monitors are very wide and high resolution that I'm looking at. So, yes, If you're looking at the madmanmachine.com website on a laptop computer or something, 1024 by 768 screen maybe, what is wrong with the website? Is there bad design? Is it hard to read? Are you getting bad advertising popping up? Is the content not showing up in the right places? Now you've got me worried. So if you could email me and say whether it looks fine or whether it looks bad somehow, or are you seeing something you're not supposed to be seeing? And while you're out at that website, notice that I did update the results, February results for the Lazy Portfolio Smackdown. We have the professional Lazy Portfolios, and we have 66 entries into the game. We're trying to find out who can pick the portfolio of index funds that has the best return for the least amount of risk. And of all the professional returns, professional portfolios, none of them have a positive return for 2008 so far. The Scott Burns's portfolios are the top three. Even the Six Ways from Sunday portfolio is down 2%. But the entries into the game, we've got Mudfud, who's stinking up the works there because he bought a bear China fund. It's up 19% for the year. And I've posted some snapshots of the scatter plots from foliodex.com just below each of the tables. And it gives you an idea of where in the risk versus return plot all of these portfolios fit. And I just want to mention one more time, on this chart, where you want to be is top left. Left because that's the lowest risk, and high at the top because that's the highest return. And it turns out a measure of this is basically called the Sharpe ratio. A measure of top leftedness is the Sharpe ratio. Now the Sharpe ratio adds one more element in that, and it subtracts out the risk-free rate of return. So at zero risk, what would the return be? Probably right now it's about 2% or 3% or something, or maybe even 1% with the credit crunch going on. And so the Sharpe ratio subtracts out that risk-free rate of return from the return that you're seeing there, and then computes the return divided by the risk to get the ratio. Now you can click on these charts at the website and it'll take you out to foliodex.com. That was our tool in the crib a couple shows ago. And you can interactively click on these bubbles and see which portfolio each particular bubble represents. And then you can also click in the table that they present to view the contents of those portfolios. So one of the reasons that I'm gathering all of this lazy portfolio data is I want to figure out which one is the best and for all time. What's the perfect portfolio? Now, admittedly, the data that I have to work with is only about 7 or 8 years old. These mutual funds that we're looking at only go back to about year 2000, give or take a few years. Of course, the ETFs only go back a couple or 3 years. So we're not looking at very good historical data. And that's the difference, by the way, with what they're doing at Index Funds Advisors. IFA.com, they have 80 years or so of historical data on the stock market. And so their portfolios are very well constructed. I'm trying to figure out what we can do with something other than the Dimensional Funds Advisors portfolios for the do-it-yourselfer guy like me. Well, of the portfolios that we've looked at so far, the best one for this time period is the Scott Burns Six Ways from Sunday portfolio. It has six equally invested mutual funds in it. And what makes it better, it turns out, is it is one-sixth invested in the Vanguard Energy Fund. Ticker symbol VGENX, VGENX. And this is predominantly oil companies, Exxon and Chevron and so forth. And it also has a foreign bond fund, American Century. But the characteristics of the portfolio as a whole are that it has a higher Sharpe ratio than all of the other portfolios over the long term, longer term, seven years, medium term, let's call it. Well, I thought, all right, so Scott Burns has calculated this portfolio kind of ad hoc, you know, he says, let's divide it six ways equally. And I thought, well, what if we did it more on purpose and picked the funds in a more proper ratio? What kind of funds would we pick in this portfolio? And I played with the numbers and took out funds and added funds in greater proportion. And what I have come up with is a portfolio that I'll call Mr. Sharp, because I'm all about looking at the Sharp ratio in these funds now. And the Mr. Sharp portfolio includes that foreign bond fund 50%. And that really dampens down the volatility, as you can imagine, of the fund going up and down. And the other 50% is comprised of just two stock mutual funds. It includes one quarter of the total portfolio then is this Vanguard Energy Fund that's in the Scott Burns portfolio and invests in the Exxons and the Chevrons and so forth. And then the other quarter, the other 25%, is in the Vanguard Precious Metals and Mining Fund. And when you combine those three funds in this way, it yields a portfolio that has the highest Sharp ratio and also, by the way, a pretty darn good return over the periods within this past 7 or 8 years. And what that process is called, by the way, is data mining. When you try to go back and look and see what has already done the best and then apply that to a portfolio going forward, it oftentimes yields fairly sad results. But the thing that's really highlighted for me, though, is these three funds have a very high Sharp ratio. And Sharp ratios, I think, are important in a portfolio. And one of the reasons, by the way, these three funds have probably done well in this time span is probably due primarily to the devaluation of the U.S. dollar. Because the Precious Metals and Mining Fund, many of the funds in there are overseas stocks. In addition, of course, to their precious metals holdings that have skyrocketed in price in recent years. The Energy Fund, much of the earnings comes from overseas within the stocks in that fund. And, of course, the Foreign Bond Fund. So as the dollar drops, all three of these appreciate. Now, the dollar dropping, you might believe that's a thesis that can go forward as well, unless the other central banks around the world flood their currencies with easy credit like we've done. But I've taken this and I have acted upon it. I have decided I want a little piece of this. I don't care about data mining. I want a piece of this. I don't care about active investing. I want a piece of this. So I have added to my position in the Vanguard Precious Metals and Mining Fund. This signals the peak of it, by the way, friends and listeners. When I buy into something on emotion like this, on data mining, that signals the absolute peak in the market for you. So do not follow in my footsteps unless you're very careful about what you're doing. I added to the position of Vanguard Precious Metals and Mining. I added a position in the Vanguard Energy Fund. By the way, that mutual fund also has an ETF equivalent in the VDE. It's the ticker symbol. That the Precious Metals and Mining Fund doesn't have an ETF equivalent, unfortunately. And I'm still on the hunt for a good foreign bond fund. I bought a little bit of something called the FXA. This is the Australian Foreign Exchange Currency. And just to get out of the dollars. Now, I've done all this in a retirement account, so I can unwind this position if it turns out I've made a mistake. I haven't done it in a taxable fund. My taxable fund tends to be much more long-term and strategic. Of course, everything should be long-term and strategic. But in my taxable account, I really want to buy things that I just don't ever want to sell until I need the money, or I lose my faith in capitalism. But I've added the Mr. Sharp portfolio to the lazy portfolios at it, Foliodex, and on the website. And we'll keep tracking it throughout the year to see if the past is prologue to the future and see how well this portfolio can do in 2008. It turns out, year to date, Mr. Sharp's done pretty well. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Money Machine Show 101 is Bill Bonner. Bill Bonner is president and CEO of Agora Incorporated, one of the world's largest financial newsletter companies, headquartered in Baltimore, Maryland, and offices in all kinds of other places. He's also a creator of The Daily Reckoning, a contrarian financial newsletter sent via email at dailyreckoning.com. And I have just finished reading his book from a couple of years ago called Empire of Debt: The Rise of an Epic Financial Crisis. Yeah, the book's written with Addison Wiggin of thedailyreckoning.com. And it's a wonderful book that describes how we got into the mess that we're in. And reading it today in 2008, now remember, this is written in 2000, well, it was written in probably 2005, copyrighted and copywritten in 2006. So I would say it's probably 2.5 years old. But his description of the easy credit, the low, low, low interest rates, and how anybody can get a mortgage, anybody can get credit, and more importantly, the devaluation of the U.S. currency, the U.S. dollar. And the results are stunningly accurate. So his two main theses are, first of all, America is an empire, and secondly, America is in debt. And on page 290, I'll read a little bit here. He says, America's empire of debt rests on many huge deceptions that we have described in this book. And he's got a list of the deceptions that one generation can consume and stick the next generation with the bill. That you can get something for nothing. That the rest of the world will take American IOUs forever. No questions asked. That house prices will forever go up. That American labor is inherently more valuable than foreign labor. Continuing his list of deceptions, that American capitalist system is freer, more dynamic, and more productive than other systems. That other countries want to be more like America, even if it is forced on them. That the virtues that have made America rich and powerful are no longer required to keep it rich and powerful. That domestic savings and capital investment are no longer necessary. And finally, that the United States no longer needs to make things for export. And then on page 294, he asks, what will happen to Americans' debts? The total value of all assets in America is only about $50 trillion. Current U.S. debt is about $37 trillion. Add it to the present value of federal government liabilities, and America is broke, busted, bankrupt, no bread, like nothing. It couldn't pay its debts even if it wanted to. When people cannot pay their debts, they do not pay them. But the debts do not cease to exist. They are merely paid by someone else, the creditor. In the case of America's debts to foreign nations, this can be achieved in three ways. The currency in which the debt is denominated can be devalued against the other currencies. The currency can be made less viable through inflation, or the debt can be repudiated. One of these things, or all of them, is likely to happen. Again, written 2 years ago, I think he had observed it up until that time, and since that time, it has only accelerated. Two things in particular: the devaluation of the U.S. dollar and the coming inflation, the high price and cost of goods. And by the way, when I see people on TV, and there's one guy on TV, I can't remember who it was. No, I know, I do remember who it was. It was Ben Bernanke. He said, the rising oil prices and high cost of wheat are creating inflationary pressures. Wow, that is amazing doublespeak or doublethink. Saying that the rising cost of oil is creating inflationary pressures. The rising oil price is the result of inflation. And the rising wheat price is the result of inflation and devaluing of the American currency. And here's the other sad thing I realized when talking about inflation. Not only is inflation itself a tax on all of us. And why is that, by the way? Well, the government prints and prints and prints more money. And we pay for that through rising prices of things. So instead of the government just taking the money out of our checking accounts, they just go ahead and make the money anyway. And we have to take the money out of our checking accounts to pay for the rising cost of things. You see how that works? So they don't need our permission to tax us anymore. But not only is inflation itself a tax, but they also tax us on inflation. Now, think about how this works. Let's say you trade in $100 right now, and you buy a little tiny piece of gold, right? You can only buy a tenth of an ounce of gold at that exchange rate, by the way. All right, so let's say a year goes by. A year ago, you bought $100 worth of gold. Now that gold is worth $200. So the value of gold has gone up, you say? No. Gold still has its same value. It's the dollar that's cut in half in value, right? So you go and sell your gold and you get the dollars back out of that now. You get $200. Well, guess what you got to do? You've got to pay 20 to 30 or 40% of your gain, now so-called gain, to the government in taxes. So you're taxed by inflation and you're taxed on inflation. Well, I won't go into everything that this book talks about. It is a fascinating read. I was hoping that I would get the answer of, where do I put my money now if the American currency is being devalued so badly? I think his answer would be about the same thing as Peter Schiff said, you know, basically get it out of dollars. Well, the last page of the book, it's not a spoiler, but it is the ending of the book. He says, we know the past tense, how America's empire of debt was built. What we don't know is the future tense, how and when it will end. It is like our own death. We know it'll happen, but we don't want to think about it. Still, it's the sort of thing you want to be prepared for all the time. A sensible man may not know the hour or the place of his demise, but he does not doubt that it is coming. If he's smart, he'll be ready for death any day of the week. So is a sensible investor ready for the day a great empire peaks out. He doesn't know when it will happen, and the longer it doesn't happen, the more he believes it may never happen at all. But nature smiles neither on vacuums nor monopolies. Empires are a monopoly on force. They don't last forever. What is peculiar and promises to be entertaining about the U.S. debt empire is that it is more absurd than most, which is to say it is less likely to last very long. That does not mean that the United States will disappear, but you should be prepared for a write-down of its debt at any moment. And the very last sentence says, and buy gold. Well, congratulations, Bill Bonner. You're the guru on Madman Machine Show 101. So in that same vein of doom and gloom, let me play a little clip for you from CNBC's interview with Warren Buffett that they had last Monday and see what he thinks about the American economy.
So, and that's the question. You can't see how far out this lasts if it's something we pull out of quickly.
I didn't see it in 73 and 74. I didn't see how bad things were going to get. I kept buying more as they got worse. But if I'd seen in 73 what was going to happen in 74, I wouldn't have bought anything in 73. You can't predict. We don't try and time anything or predict. We just look for where there are good values, and if we find them, we buy them. And if we don't, we don't buy anything. Nobody knows what the economy is going to look like a year from now or 2 years from now. But you have certain things in motion that could possibly lead to that, or that it may not. But you can't rule it out. There's no way you can say that the trouble we've experienced and the trouble we're likely to experience can't lead to something pretty severe. And maybe we'll be lucky and it won't happen. I've never made any money out of economic forecasting. I've made money by staying out of trouble.
And I think that's a key point that I made last December when I asked, should it be time to dynamically adjust our risk capacity and stay out of trouble? And speaking of gold, I want to play for you a little clip from a YouTube video I watched recently. Now, this is from the Rich Dad guy, you know, Robert Kiyosaki. I got to tell you, I don't hold a whole lot of confidence in what Rich Dad guy is selling. He was one of the guys who really wanted people to flip real estate recently. And anybody that followed his advice recently, I think has gotten badly burned. And so the same caution would apply to what I'm about to play for you now. But Rich Dad held a little seminar, apparently, about predictions for 2008. And he had as a guest on this seminar fellow by the name of Mike Maloney, who is a dealer in gold. And here's what Mike Maloney had to say about gold.
That's one of the things, too. You can buy it and you can take it home. It can't go bankrupt on you. You can't have a labor dispute or Enron accounting.
Let me just break in there for a second. Actually, depending on how you own the gold, it could be in trouble. Like some people are saying, owning the GLD ETF depends on the stability of the fund that holds it, right?
It's just this super simple thing. You buy it now. You sit on it for 5 years. I don't know how long it's going to take. 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. We could be going into a currency crisis right now. There was a trend line for gold where it was going up very smoothly and the price hit this trend line. It changed a little bit in 2005. I was hoping that we would drop back to the 750 area or so by February and touch this trend line. If we don't, we've established a new trend line that's extremely steep, which would give us maybe $1,500 to $2,500 gold by the end of this year. And that says that we're beginning a currency crisis. Precious metals are the only investment class where their bull market can go from stage one to stage three, and it's called a currency crisis. And you could see gold anywhere from $5,000 to actually trillions, quadrillions, sextillions of dollars per ounce.
All right, that's the part that got my attention. Gold at sextillion dollars per ounce.
How far the dollar and the euro and the loonie and the Aussie dollar.
They create them all now by doing this. They just type them into a computer, the dollars. They don't have to print them anymore. It used to be that you had to mint coinage to expand the currency supply. Then you had to print paper to expand the currency supply. But now all you do is you add zeros to it. Just and boom, you know, it's 10 times.
Now that's a mad money machine.
They don't even have to print this trash anymore.
Right.
It's electronic. That is how fast it's going to hit people. If you can understand that, that's why it's information age, not industrial age. And so all those... I feel for them, hoping the government's going to pay, you know, like, who's going to win? You know, is it Hillary? Is it Obama? Is it Mitt Romney? I mean, they can't do a thing about this. It's too late.
So that is some pretty scary stuff. And, you know, any good seminar is going to try to put some real fear into you to get your attention. And it got my attention, I'll have to admit. The scenario that he's talking about there, of course, would be hyperinflation. Similar to what Zimbabwe is experiencing right now with, 100,000% inflation per year? And you've heard all the stories about Weimar Republic in Germany, 1922, 1923, where people would buy a loaf of bread for a wheelbarrow full of German marks. No, but the great thing about hyperinflation in America is that it becomes so much easier to pay off our debts to all the foreigners, right? If we're $37 trillion in debt... Then when $37 trillion becomes so devalued that it only buys what would buy $37 million today, then we can easily cough up $37 million, pay for it, pay it all off. And the bottom line, folks, is when someone gives you advice, you have to ask, what is motivating that person to give me their advice? Whether it's a doctor or a dentist or a financial advisor or a broker, like Mike Malone or the Rich Dad Seminar guy, you've got to look at what's their motivation. And of course, Mike Malone wants you to get interested in gold so that you'll buy gold through him. Rich Dad wants you to get interested in his ideas so that you'll buy seminars from him. Let's turn the spotlight back on me for a second then. What motivates me? And should you listen to me? Well, probably not. Probably not, quite frankly. Because what motivates me is... financial freedom, my personal financial freedom. Now, admittedly, this show has a sponsor. It's Index Funds Advisors. And quite candidly, I don't want to say anything that upsets my sponsor. But I am saying things that my sponsor doesn't really have an interest in. For example, on this show, I'm talking about gold. Well, Index Funds Advisors, first of all, they're not a broker in gold. And second of all, they really don't even recommend that you buy the commodity gold because gold doesn't have any earnings behind it like stocks do. And if you chart gold throughout the 80 years like Index Funds Advisors does, you'll see that it's horrible returns compared to the stock market. But there are folks that you can listen to, and those are the academics. Let me play for you step two in the musical interpretation of the 12-step program for active investors. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. A 12-step program for active investors. Step two, Nobel laureates. My name is Paul, and I'm an active investor. I sit at my computer, my active trading software. And some days are better than others. Some never end. Now, the academics tell me that by doing this, that in the end, I'm going to be out. And my returns will be lower. Not me, man. I'm the active investor. I'm going to live on, die young. I'm living for today. I want to know what my returns are. I want to see all my stocks at a glance. And with my market-beating returns, I'm going to dance till I drop. I don't want to be told by any school teacher how my portfolio won't grow old with me. I'm the active investor. I always want to be on top.
So in the end, you're going to be out. You're going to stay low. You're going to be away. You're going to live hard. You're going to die young. You're going to live for today. You want to know now. You want to see all. You want to dance till you drop. Don't want to be told. Don't want to get old. Always want to be on top. Always want to be on top.
In 1900, Louis Bachelier's doctoral thesis said there is no useful information contained in historical price movements of securities. In 1933, Alfred Coles reviewed about 12,000 stock recommendations and published his results in an article entitled, "Can Stock Market Forecasters Forecast?" His conclusion, it is doubtful. Nobel Prize in Economics winner Harry Markowitz presented the theory of the efficient portfolio. Modigliani and Miller showed that a firm's value is unrelated to its dividend policy, and that policy is an unreliable guide for stock selection. William Sharpe, another Nobel Prize in Economics winner, said that the capital asset pricing model finds that the expected return of an asset is determined by its beta coefficient, a means of measuring the volatility of a security or portfolio of securities in comparison with the market as a whole. Paul Samuelson, another Nobel Prize in Economics winner, said that market prices are the best estimates of value. Price changes follow random patterns, and future stock prices are unpredictable. Eugene Fama's efficient market theory concluded that no one can consistently outperform a market. Then he, along with Kenneth French, developed the three-factor asset pricing model as an invaluable tool for asset allocation and portfolio analysis. If you're not aware of the works of these distinguished academics, if your only knowledge of the stock market is what the TV or newspaper tell you, we're here to rescue you. We're here to bring you home.
Is there some way you can rescue me? Some way you can bring me home again? Some way you can rescue me?
This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes finding the perfect portfolio to make a mad money machine. I'll see you next week on show 102. In the meantime, do visit our sponsor, Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. Matching people with portfolios. Hey, in the meantime, if you've got a Twitter account, would you link up to me? My account name at Twitter is Mad Money Machine. I'd be interested in following you back as well. And if you don't have a Twitter account, well, I appreciate any and all feedback about the Mad Money Machine. You can send it to feedback@madmoneymachine.com. You can comment in the show notes, or you can call the voicemail line at 206-734-4763. And please help me out by looking at the website and seeing what's wrong with it. And let me know. And click on a Google ad while you're out there. I'll see you next week.